On this episode of The Playbook, if you want a job in sports, this is the episode to listen to, because I have Peter Murray, the CEO of the Professional Fighters League, and he's done it all from the MMA to the NFL.
This is Entrepreneurs The Playbook, where each week I bring you some of the greatest athletes, celebrities, and entrepreneurs to talk about their personal and professional playbook to success and what made them champions on the field and in the boardroom. I'm your host and CEO of Sports One Marketing, David Meltzer.
This is Dave Meltzer with Entrepreneurs The Playbook, and I have another fighter here, not the kind of fighter that you think of, but it's Peter Murray, CEO of Professional Fighters League.
Hey, Dave, great to be here.
I really appreciate you coming on, because so many people dream about getting a job in sports, and the majority of people that have the cool jobs in sports, at least, have jobs like you and I that nobody's really heard of.
Right.
And so I want to start with kind of when you were a kid, what'd you dream about being?
When I was a kid, I really wanted to be a police officer.
Really? How come?
I have family in NYPD. I grew up New York City kid in the Bronx. You know, I thought they were the leaders in the community, doing the right thing on behalf of, people and helping people. But took the test, passed the test, got into the academy, and I decided to pursue my passion. And at the time, and that was really the intersection when I was in college. Like, I was trying to figure like many young adults figuring out what they want to do, and that was definitely a path. But I decided to follow a passion, and that passion was in marketing, and tapped a creative mind that I felt I had at the time, and I got into advertising. And that was my first career opportunity.
It's interesting, because I think it's so difficult for younger people when they hear people like us say, I had a passion. And because some people don't understand what that means when you say I have a passion, because they're I don't have a passion.
Right?
Sure. And I hear it all the time.
Sure.
What advice would you say, or what key indicators would you tell them when you say, hey, I was going to be a police officer, but I had a passion for marketing, which is a really broad
sure.
thing to have a passion.
Sure.
But it was really the creativeness that
That's
you
right.
wanted to be creative.
That was the thing that I felt. I have creative mind, and wanted to curate, wanted to tell stories, and I wanted to apply it to building brands. And I did my research. I was inspired by a professor. So it's all about inspiration.
Right.
Whether you read it, you see it, you experience something, you meet someone. And I was inspired by a professor that I said, wow, that person's career, I can do that. That's what I want to do. So once I had that class, it was a junior year, I said, I'm not going to be a policeman. That's what I'm going to do. And then I ventured. I wound up, I worked my way through college, three jobs.
Wow.
And my first job was at Young & Rubicam. Largest agency in the 80s at the time, privately owned before all the agencies got gobbled
up. How'd you get
up.
That job?
I got that job submitting my resume and kicking down the door. And I interviewed for a role, didn't get the job. And I was pissed. And so, because I knew I was as smart, but I knew I could work harder than anybody.
Yep.
And it was a just get me in the door mentality, because they had a great training program. And so I knew I could learn from others, and so I basically took a job almost in the mailroom, and I made less money after college than I was making in college working my way through college. And I did it because I knew I just got to get experience and get me in the door, and I quickly worked up the ranks and
would you say
on my way.
I think it's really important, we were talking about Mike Tannenbaum earlier. Yeah. He was general manager of the Jets and the Dolphins.
Great.
And people, he'll even say, which frustrates me, how lucky he is. I said, well, hold on a second. We both graduated law school with $100,000 of loans, the same law school.
Right.
And I wanted to work in sports, but I ended up selling legal research online because it was a skill of mine, right?
Right.
But he went, I think, 4 years making $600 a month working for the Saints. Right. And where don't you think that you're much better off, go ahead, you have to understand not only where you want to be, but the sacrifice you're willing to make.
That's right.
And two, confidence in yourself that, look, just get me in the door.
That's right. Right.
And so many guys start off as drivers to someone, personal assistants, mailroom
sure.
people,
sure.
but they have it and they're willing to work, attract, and allow things to happen. And they trust in the fact that, how long were you in the mailroom, for example?
2 years.
2 years, because that's an important part.
18 months.
But still, most people, they don't have that patience.
Sure. Sure.
And when people find out, you know, not only are you the CEO of the Professional Fighters League, but your career, you work for WME,
right.
William Morris Endeavor, you NFL,
right?
Key executive.
Under Armour.
Under Armour, right? Yep. You're good friends with Kevin Plank. Yep. All because you spent, and it wouldn't have happened, I don't think, unless you spent the 18 months
in a mailroom. I agree 100%.
And people aren't willing to do that.
I tell kids and anybody in their career, just follow your passion, find a way, and be tenacious. Be tenacious, but hard work. You have to work hard. You know, but if you're passionate about it, it's easy. It's really not work. And everything is a building block. Every interaction with an opportunity to meet someone, work on a project, and just keep, you know, blazing your trail.
Right, which is really important too, because a lot of people look at your career and go, yeah, of course he loves what he does. He's so lucky. And meanwhile, even when you were in the mailroom, you were saying you learned to love what you did. You didn't love being in the mailroom, I assume.
No, but I learned a lot. And you know, just consuming information, meeting people, figuring out how things work, and say, okay, I can apply for that next job. And when it clicks in,
right, and I think it's important you said meeting people, because if you're going to start an entry-level position that you want to accelerate through the ranks, it's important that you take an entry-level position where you have interaction with other people.
That's right.
Right?
Yeah,
and I think
exactly.
It's very important. You don't want to sit in code.
That's correct. I mean, unless you want to be a coder.
Right, right.
You want to sit in the dark room.
Exactly.
And, your
and some people 100%. Have that passion, which is
that's
really
right.
cool.
Yeah.
Where now, let's take you through. You went from that job.
So I was
to,
at Young and Reuben Camp.
Yep.
I worked through their management training program. And from there, I went to Backer Spielvogel Bates, another agency. It was a mid-sized shop. So after 5 years, my first job was 5 years. It's like a long time.
When
you talk to, I stayed there 5 years, management training program. They didn't want me to leave, but I wanted a different experience, a different culture, a different agency. And then I wound up being a managing director of the Miller Brewing business. We did all their advertising. I drank a lot of beer at the time. I felt I was really in tune with the consumer. And it was a creative opportunity. So I did that. But backing up at Young Rubicam, I worked on the Advil account. And on the Advil account,
they matched the beer account.
But that was my first sort of unlock in sports. So Nolan Ryan.
Yeah.
So a legendary baseball player, and I worked with Nolan. We worked on the campaign together. And then it really opened my eyes to the power of sports to build brands, the power of sports marketing. And so that really sparked it for me. And then when I went to Miller Brewing, they did a lot of sports marketing in their advertising, from NASCAR and you name the sport. So we told stories around them. We activated those relationships through big campaigns. And then I was recruited to the NFL.
And, yeah, which is so interesting. When you were you conscious when you were young and you took on the Advil account and got to work with Nolan Ryan and really the sports side of things, were you conscious about the fact that, hey, maybe this will lead to me actually working for the NFL someday?
Absolutely. I mean, once sort of I worked on that particular campaign, met Nolan, we did that work, I realized that I'd like to marry my creative passion, my marketing sort of skills to the sports space. And so, which was a big reason I took the Miller Brewing, job and at Backer, because we touched a lot. It was a big sports portfolio. And then from there, I was recruited to the NFL, and it was an entrepreneurial role. I left, and I felt after 7 years in advertising, I was like, I need to touch something else. I can always go back to this.
Right.
I had knowledge, I had experience, I had a network. So for me, it wasn't a big flyer, like in 1995. I went to the NFL, and it was before things were, you know, how the business
right.
is today. And I took a role leading all of NFL Films as IP and developing new businesses, created a commercial production division, led all their distribution of their content, ran sales and media sales, figured things out, things that I touched that I had never done before.
Or anybody else.
Or anybody else did it. So
right.
it's like create value. So
right.
one of the things, not only be, you know, pursue your passion and be tenacious, create value, you know, learn, you know, value creation, you know, for the company, for your team, and for yourself.
Absolutely. And the thing also that I'm going to point out that you said is you said, I could always fall back on. One of the things I see about entrepreneurs is they don't realize the stepping stones in place.
Yeah.
So even when I got out of law school and people thought I was crazy because I had an oil and gas litigation job, you know, did really well in law school,
sure.
but I sold legal research online with my
right.
mom telling me the internet was a fad. But I also worked really hard. I developed all these skills, knowledge, to always know. And I even took the bar, even though I didn't have to, to sell legal research.
Sure.
Because in my mind, it was like, okay, I'm going to take this huge risk that everyone thinks I'm crazy for taking, which ended up making me $1 million 9 months out of law school and then selling for $3.4 billion.
Right.
But I wouldn't have, I don't think I would have done it, just to be honest, if I didn't have something to fall back on. And there's so many people that haven't done the steps, put in the work, something to fall back on so they could roll the dice.
Right.
You got 18 months of salary, 18 months of savings in your bank account. It's a lot easier to start up a business.
Right. Yeah. No, I agree with that.
And people don't realize that.
And you have to empower yourself. You're your own brand. You're your own business. How you
especially
map it.
Today.
Your roadmap. You got to create it. And that's the fun thing about it, a career. When you say, oh, yeah, I have a young daughter. She's just starting. She graduated college 2 weeks ago. And she's into her first full-time job. And she's creating her brand. And she's creating her roadmap and where she wants to go. So it's exciting. Time of life.
Yeah.
And entrepreneur, where it meets an entrepreneur. I mean, what I love, like for me, I always had an entrepreneurial spirit. Mm-hmm. So while I worked at big companies, whether it be Young & Rubicam, whether it be Backer, Spill, Vogel, Bates, and then I realized that even while within the NFL, you know, it was a very conservative organization, but going back to creating value, no one had to tell me what to do, how to create value. Just went to what's our goals as a company, as a league, our division. And then we had amazing IP. So I created new businesses off of that IP and sort of delivered that back to to the organization. And I was fortunate enough at the NFL, every 18 months I was in a different role that I created.
Nice. And to the biggest question, which most people are probably sitting here wondering, why would you leave the NFL?
13 years, long time.
Yeah.
And at that time, I said the world changed right after 2008. I left in 2009. At the time, I was the head of content and business development globally. Prior to that, I ran all global sponsorship, media sales, entertainment. And I felt that I was no longer growing.
Interesting.
I was in an enviable role, but I was no longer growing experiential, from an experiential.
Was it difficult? Because people to ask me that all the time for advice. You know, I coach a lot of people, and they're comfortable.
Yep.
You were very comfortable, right?
It got me uncomfortable being comfortable.
Yeah.
And when I felt at that time in my life, I was seeing the rest of my life, like the horizon. I was like, I know what this looks like. That really scared the heck out of me. And I said, you know what? I can do a lot of things. And so I decided that after probably 18 months of really soul searching, talking to a lot of people, colleagues in the business, and a number of people recruiting me, and I felt I don't want to go into sports, or I don't want to run a team, or I don't want to go to another league. I had those opportunities.
Yeah.
I was like, same.
Right.
I was like, I'm not going to grow. I can make some more money, but I'm not going to grow. So I decided to go to William Morris Endeavor. It was actually William Morris at the time. I was recruited by their CEO Jim Wyatt. And he's like, hey, kid, I'll give you the keys to Hollywood. Run our commercials division, do this, do that. And I said, well, I'm going to learn a lot from Jim. I'm going to learn a lot from sort of looking at this part of the content sort of business. But I went there also to bring a new business to them and create a sports division. And so it was somewhat entrepreneurial. It was leveraging their platform, their relationships, their capital. And half the role was entertainment, and then half the role was sports. Eventually, William Morris came together with Endeavor.
Yep.
And so I spent 3 years there and built, I was the head of corporate consulting. But again, as an entrepreneur, I really learned in that agency space, you're your own IP. Your IP is what matters.
Yeah, and more than ever, right?
And how you develop a book. How you develop your business on not only, the agency's back, but your own. And so that value, creating value. So I did that, and then I realized it's my IP. It was more my IP than the agency's IP. And so I decided to launch my own company, Insignia, 3 years later. And I did that. It was a Steve Ross back venture with Matt Higgins. We were talking earlier.
Yep.
Matt's a dear friend.
Been on the playbook.
Right. So, yeah. And he's just, amazing mind, amazing person.
And now a shark.
Right, and now a shark. He's truly a shark.
Yeah.
And we launched Insignia, sports marketing, content agency, and representing brands, representing talent, creating content. And it led me to, when I left the NFL, just in terms of my next adventure, because the hardest thing, and I shared this with Matt, the hardest thing I had to do in my career was leave my baby.
Yeah.
And that was Insignia, a company that I conceived, I founded, I was the president and CEO and co-founder, and I hired a great team. People believed in me. They believed in the opportunity. They left big companies to come to this band, like work with this band of pirates,
yeah,
to create, you know, carve out our space in this world. And the opportunity, Kevin Plank, Under Armour was a client. They were also a client of mine when I was at William Morris Endeavor. And Kevin presented an opportunity that I could not turn down. And so I did step out of Insignia, but you know, I gave it back to the team. We incentivized the team, and you know, they're on their way. And I spent 4+ years, you know, roughly, working inside the halls of Under Armour, leading global sports marketing as a general manager of half a dozen business categories. You wear a lot of hats, big company, very entrepreneurial.
Yeah.
And so all of those experiences, from advertising to the entertainment space to my own entrepreneurial sort of company and Insignia, and then on to Under Armour, led me to this opportunity of the PFL.
And the PFL, what is it that you see in the future for the PFL?
No better time to be in sports, no better time to be in the fastest growing sport in the world in MMA, and the opportunity to build a product, a brand, a product from the ground up, a new league for the new age of sports. It's an incredible opportunity. You know, for me personally and professionally, as well as from a business standpoint, this is absolutely scalable. Again, number 3 sport in the world, fastest growing, and there's only one game in town really that matters.
Right.
And there's room for another leader in this next evolution of the sport. So I have amazing partners. We have titans in our ownership group, from media, sports, entertainment, and technology,
yeah,
from Ted Leonsis to the Learners who own the Capitals,
yeah,
in D.C.,
all good friends too, Zach and Ted.
Exactly.
Amazing people.
Mark Burnett. And so we're on our journey is to change the game.
Yeah.
And to change the game, we're launching MMA for the avid MMA fan as well as non-avid fans, but it's not Me Too MMA. it comes with a point, you know, real differentiation. And our differentiation is old boxing model, you know, and even MMA today, promotion-based format, okay, mm-hmm, matchmaking.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's room for that. But for us, we talk to fighters. So we're good listeners. We're good talkers.
Yeah.
But we're good listeners. We talk. Where's the friction there? What are the issues that you're having as a professional athlete? How can we help address that? Same thing with fans. We talk to fans. We talk to the consumer. And some of their issues, I don't know why fights are put together. I don't know where they lead to. So we built a format where there's, and they're the first to do it, where individual fighters across 6 weight classes compete in a regular season, a playoff, and a championship format.
And not pay-per-view.
That's right.
Right.
And we're over the air on ESPN, so alongside of UFC. We're on ESPN Linear. We're on their direct-to-consumer platform in ESPN Plus, as well as Deportes. But we did that as entrepreneurs, because we see the field on this one. And we launched last year, so we launched property just 12 months ago, first ever to the consumer. It was 2 years in the making. One of the co-founders, Don Davis, he's the chairman. When UFC sold for $4+ billion, you know, when that went over the tape, got Don's attention as a venture capitalist. And Don's the co-founder of Revolution in DC, yep, with Steve Case, Ted Leonsis is part of it. He said, wow, the largest sports transaction ever, right? Teams are in the bees, but leagues really don't sell.
Right.
It was major, guys' attention. And then doing the due diligence and homework, there's room for another. So if you look at other, you know, the world's top sports, right? Number one is soccer or global football.
Yep.
There are roughly 10 organizations that are generating revenue of more than $500 million.
Yeah, and keep growing.
And keep growing, and in the billions. And there's only one organization in MMA that is sort of at that at the time that half a billion dollars in revenue.
Yeah.
So he said, okay, it's time to move. And now time to move is to fulfill that that demand, because they can only fulfill so much content.
Yeah.
And not only that, when you look at distribution, so no better time to be in sports. You look at distribution, you have all the traditional players in media and sports, linear networks extending into their own digital and DTC platforms, but then you have digital only. They're all vying for premium quality live sports.
For sure.
So that was the thesis. So we launched it last year. We bet on ourselves. So last year we validated the format. We did a deal with NBC Sports. And then from there, we had a lot of interested parties in distribution because it was differentiated, because it was compelling live quality content, and because there's a marketplace for it for consumers. And so
and you took a proven model.
That's right.
Right.
That's exactly
all the
right.
leagues, even the traditional leagues,
they took wild cards from the NFL, from the NBA,
had that experience.
Frankly, from tournament structures in golf,
Sweet 16.
And tennis. Exactly. And our format for playoffs, in terms of an exciting product, you know, you have a regular season. And once you get to playoffs in October, our playoffs are in October, it's March Madness meets MMA in October, where it's a bracketed system. Fighters actually fight twice in one night to get into the championship.
Nice.
And then our championship last year, we had it here at MSG in New York. Before the ball drops in Times Square, six fighters raise their belt, each earn $1 million, become champions of their respective categories. Now that is real money in this sport.
That's awesome.
So in the UFC, there have been less than 10, roughly 10, about a dozen fighters that have actually fought for $1 million in a single fight, putting pay-per-view participation aside.
Right.
So for us, to advance the sport, okay, you need to recognize the athletes. And to recognize the athletes, you actually need to
give them
incentivize
something.
Them.
Yeah, something
and
to win
so,
for.
Exactly. So we do that. And our product...
Ironically, like even in the NFL, right, very few players are incentivized with that much money to win the Super Bowl.
Exactly. No, you're right. You're right about that.
You know, and they have a decent agent.
And when there's a purse on the line, you're right.
Yeah.
And when there's a purse on the line, fighters lean in. They're exciting matches or bouts, but also fans lean in because there's something on the line.
Exactly.
And so, yeah, we're excited about what we're doing. Again, we're distributed again.
Do you have a title sponsor for the championship?
Like not yet. We're not selling that yet.
Yeah.
So our biggest, you know, we're partnering with leaders from the worldwide leader in sports, ESPN, Anheuser-Busch InBev, global beer partner, Geico, our exclusive partner in insurance, and others coming on board. So, you know, in a short amount of time, we are changing the game with a premium product, and we have some momentum. So it's fun.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, the lesson that I think best describes you, Peter, is that, you know, you can't limit your point of entry, but you have to be willing to take mitigated risks.
Right?
Because
sure.
you've always taken mitigated risks.
Right.
It wasn't, you know, you're not the guy living in his car.
That's right.
But you put the work in, you've always tried to outwork everyone.
Sure.
And you've relied on invested in yourself the entire process. And I think that's important for a lot of entrepreneurs to realize that it's not just, you know, complete sacrifice. There's a lot of consistent work and keeping your mind open to what opportunities exist, what have I learned in the past, and how can I apply it to the future?
That's right.
And in your middle ages, you know, to go ahead and leave the jobs that you have learned from NFL to WME to your own company that was funded by RSE, right? I mean, ridiculous successes. And someone would say, as they did when I left Lee Steinberg, like, why would you start your own company and leave the most notable sports agent in the world? You've got to have mitigated risks. And knowing and confident in yourself, if this doesn't work out, it'll evolve into something
Absolutely.
Else.
Absolutely. And like to not go for it, you know, and
you're not living life.
Exactly.
Well, I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
This is truly a playbook for success. Dave Meltzer with Peter Murray on Entrepreneurs, The Playbook. Well, I hope you enjoyed this week's episode of The Playbook as much as me. On a personal note, I just wanted to thank everyone for making The Playbook such a success. Don't forget to continue it by sharing, subscribing, and listening to your favorite episodes. This is Dave Meltzer with The Playbook.